This program is provided by lawyer Kyungjin Kim.
Imagine for a second, just imagine that you're running a massive world-spanning tech company and you decide to just completely open the floodgates on your budget.
Oh yeah, blank check territory.
Exactly. I'm talking about taking your capital expenditure, your R&D, server farm investments, and just doubling them overnight. Tens of billions of dollars poured into a single quarter.
Right.
And you're doing all this to build the next generation of AI, operating under the, you know, very logical assumption that if you double the financial fuel, you'll naturally double the brain power of the machine.
Makes sense on paper, right?
It does. But then the independent test results come back. You look at the data, and the AI that you just spent a small country's GDP on, it hasn't gotten any smarter. Like, at all.
It is the ultimate corporate paradox.
Yeah.
And honestly, it's causing a lot of quiet panic in Silicon Valley boardrooms right now.
I bet.
You know, you've built this colossal engine, shoveled just an unprecedented amount of coal into the furnace, and the speedometer hasn't moved a single inch.
And that really begs the question, right? So if the machine isn't getting smarter, what on earth are they actually buying with all that money? So welcome to today's deep dive. Our mission today is to pull back the curtain on the AI industry as it stands right now in mid-2026.
Because what you are about to see is a massive seismic shift in the landscape.
Yeah, exactly. The whole romantic era of chasing pure science fiction level machine intelligence, that's over. We have dropped straight into a gritty industrial battle over pricing, corporate bureaucracy, and geopolitical maneuvering.
The landscape is just completely fractured. I mean, the companies that are going to survive aren't necessarily the ones building a digital god anymore. They're the ones figuring out the logistics of deployment.
Right. And to guide us through this reality check, we are relying on a really fantastic, comprehensive daily AI briefing report and its accompanying commentary. Now, this incredible foundation of data was provided by lawyer Kyungjin Kim, a former lawmaker.
His analysis is just brilliant for this.
It really is. He's cross-referenced earnings reports, government filings, independent testing labs, all of it. So his insights are going to be our roadmap today for cutting through the marketing spin.
Yeah, and his perspective is vital here because he looks at this not just as a technologist, but, you know, through the lens of regulation and real-world deployment. It helps us see the actual machinery operating beneath all the hype.
So buckle up. We are going to look at Alphabet's mind-blowing spending spree, unpack how a fundamentally misunderstood budget structure caused a massive crisis inside the U.S. Army, and then zoom out to the new digital Cold War happening right now over open source AI weights.
It's a lot to cover.
It is. So let's start by following the money. Google's parent company, Alphabet, just dropped their Q2 2026 earnings. And looking at the CapEx line item, it kind of feels like staring into a financial black hole.
Oh, the raw numbers are staggering.
Yeah,
overall revenue is up 24% to $119.8 billion.
Wow.
Yeah. And cloud revenue, which is basically the backbone for all this AI deployment, that skyrocketed 82% to $24.8 billion.
That's huge.
It is. But the figure that defines this entire era of tech is their capital expenditure. It literally doubled year over year to $44.9 billion in a single quarter.
Okay, let's unpack this for a second, because $44.9 billion in 3 months is, I mean, it's hard to even conceptualize. They aren't just buying better laptops for their engineers. What does that money actually look like in the physical world?
It looks like land grabs. Massive concrete data centers the size of small cities. Entirely new liquid cooling architectures.
Oh, right.
And dedicated energy grid contracts. Sundar Pichai, Alphabet CEO, is on record saying AI is redrawing the boundaries of business. And physically, that is absolutely true. They're buying the infrastructure to process just an ocean of data.
Because the scale is crazy now.
Yeah. I mean, the Gemini consumer app now has 950 million users. But the real scale is in their API processing the backend systems, where businesses plug directly into Google's models. That API processing is currently hitting 22 billion tokens per minute.
22 billion words and fragments of words being processed every 60 seconds. I mean, the physical energy required to sustain that compute is just mind-boggling.
Yes.
But here is the paradox we started with. We have all this infrastructure, all this money. Then an independent evaluator called Artificial Analysis scores Google's brand new, highly anticipated model Gemini 3.6 Flash.
Right.
Out of a possible spectrum of improvement, they gave it an intelligence score of exactly 50.
Which, crucially, is the exact identical score they gave to the previous generation, the 3.5 Flash model.
Wait, really? It didn't move at all?
Not a single point. Out of 187 models on the market right now, Gemini 3.6 Flash ranks 21st. The intelligence curve hasn't just slowed down, it has effectively flatlined.
I'm looking at this 3.6 Flash update, and if the intelligence score is perfectly flat, I'm really struggling to see the value proposition here. It's like, you know, a movie studio doubling the budget for a blockbuster sequel, hyping up this mind-blowing cinematic experience, but then they deliver the exact same script.
Yeah,
exactly. The plot is the same. The dialogue is the same. The only difference is they somehow managed to film the whole thing 17% faster. Are we just paying for them to trim the fat off the output?
Essentially, yes. We are in a phase where doubling the investment no longer yields a corresponding double in cognitive capability. And that's a plateau that is heavily emphasized by lawyer Kyungjin Kim in his commentary.
So the breakthroughs aren't in IQ anymore.
No, they're entirely logistical.
Okay, so what are the actual mechanics of a logistical upgrade if the AI itself isn't smarter?
Well, it comes into efficiency and price. With 3.6 Flash, Google engineered a 17% reduction in output tokens. In plain English, the AI is just less verbose.
It doesn't ramble as much.
Right, gets to the point, which obviously saves compute power. They also updated the knowledge cutoff to March 2026. But the realer feature here is the cost. They slashed the price to $1.50 per million input tokens and $7.50 per million output tokens.
Wow, so the arms race isn't about building a digital genius anymore. It's a race to the bottom on price. They basically want to be the cheapest, fastest commodity on the market.
Exactly. And that fundamentally alters the whole industry. Because if you can't sell a profoundly smarter AI, you have to sell a faster, cheaper, and more integrated AI.
But wait, if I'm looking at this from an enterprise perspective, I mean, I'm pouring billions into Google or OpenAI, and the core engine isn't actually getting smarter. If I'm an executive, how am I keeping my valuation from collapsing?
By changing what you are actually selling. You see, raw, unconstrained intelligence is chaotic. A massive corporation doesn't want a creative genius hallucinating in their customer service portal.
No, definitely not.
They want predictability. So the tech giants are pivoting from selling raw intelligence to selling compliance, safety, and integration.
Ah, and we are seeing this exact pivot right now with OpenAI's new release.
Yes, we are.
They just launched a platform called Presence, and it's not a new GPT model that writes better poetry or whatever. It's a management platform specifically for enterprise voice and chat agents. It basically bundles safety protocols, evaluation metrics, internal corporate system links, and HR policies into one interface.
It's the infrastructure of bureaucracy applied to artificial intelligence.
Wow.
And Presence uses another underlying system called Codex to actively monitor the AI agents. So it analyzes call transcripts in real time and actually suggests structural improvements based on how the AI handled the customer.
So it's AI managing AI to ensure it doesn't break corporate policy.
Exactly. And the proof of concept is terrifyingly effective. I mean, OpenAI says they're already handling 75% of their own English support calls without any human intervention using Presence.
75%.
Yep. And early adopters are jumping on board. SoftBank is running a Japanese language agent on it. And BBVA Mexico is using it too.
Okay, here's where it gets really interesting for me. Are they essentially selling the middle management layer for AI now? This sounds less like a technological breakthrough and way more like a massive HR and compliance tool.
That is precisely the genius of the pivot.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, for legal and compliance professionals, a tool like Presence feels incredibly familiar. This is a dynamic that is broken down brilliantly by lawyer Kyungjin Kim.
What does he point out?
He notes that audit trails, internal rule enforcement, and safe deployment frameworks, those have become the actual product. The packaging is now way more valuable to a Fortune 500 company than the raw IQ of the AI itself.
So for you listening, how do you actually operate in this environment? Do you just keep paying premium subscription prices hoping your AI provider secretly achieves a breakthrough next month?
No, you shouldn't.
Yeah.
You have to completely restructure how you buy and deploy AI. Based on the practical advice provided by lawyer Kyungjin Kim, you need to segment your workflow.
Okay, how so?
You take your rigid, high-volume tasks, you know, formatting meeting minutes, extracting standard clauses from hundreds of contracts, sorting inbox inquiries, and you route all of that bulk work to the cheaper, faster models like Gemini 3.6 Flash.
Right, because it doesn't take a genius-level IQ to format a bulleted list. It just needs to be instantaneous and cost a fraction of a cent.
Exactly. And then you reserve the expensive high-tier models purely for complex drafting, nuanced issue analysis, and strategic problem-solving. If you are using a premium model to summarize a basic email chain in 2026, you are bleeding capital for absolutely no reason.
That makes total sense. But if enterprise packaging makes this technology frictionless and cheap to deploy, the immediate instinct of any chief information officer is just going to be to give it to every single employee in the building.
Oh, absolutely.
It's like the ultimate productivity hack. But the U.S. Army just found out the hard way that frictionless is a serious double-edged sword when you don't understand the underlying mechanics of how AI is built.
Yeah, this is one of the most fascinating case studies in recent tech history.
Yeah.
Because it exposes a massive blind spot in corporate procurement.
The story is wild. So the U.S. Army's CIO office rolled out an AI workspace based on a system called Ask Sage. They deployed this on a 5-year, $49 million contract starting back in May of 2025. And they allocated what sounded like a massive buffer, 100 million tokens a year.
Right, which breaks down to roughly 200,000 tokens per user per month.
Yeah.
And on paper, that looks like a disciplined, well-architected budget. But the failure wasn't in the math. It was in the architecture of the deployment.
Right, because in less than 45 days, the user base skyrocketed from 0 to 19,000 personnel. The tool was just so useful, it went totally viral internally. But here is what I don't get. If I buy a software license for 19,000 people, I just have the software. How do you run out of a digital tool in a month and a half?
Well, because AI doesn't function like traditional software licensing.
Like you don't just buy a seat and get an all-you-can-eat buffet.
Exactly. Generative AI is metered like a utility, like your water or electricity bill. The underlying architecture of this military deployment relied on auto-scaling cloud compute. The system was designed to automatically allocate tokens whenever a user prompted it.
Oh, I see.
So it completely bypassed the hard budget caps the Army thought they had hard-coded in.
So they basically hooked up a fire hose to a water meter and just let anyone in the Army turn the valve as wide as they wanted.
Pretty much.
And because of that auto-scaling feature, they burned through an entire 365-day budget of tokens in 45 days. They literally had to send out internal memos begging staff to stop using the AI so they wouldn't break the bank.
It perfectly illustrates a critical vulnerability highlighted by lawyer Kingjin Kim. He warns that providing access to a tool is an entirely different discipline from designing the financial budget for it. Law firms, mid-sized businesses, large enterprises, they're all incredibly vulnerable to this right now.
Yeah.
If you license your AI by the seat, but you don't aggressively monitor the actual API token consumption curve on the back end, your infrastructure is going to crash.
Right. Imagine hitting a peak month, like a massive litigation discovery phase or an end of year financial audit, and your AI just throws up an error code because you burned your token allotment. You can miss federal deadlines.
Exactly.
It just shows how quickly a technology that is marketed as quote unquote cheap can bankrupt an IT department when it scales internally without any friction.
And this runaway scale isn't just causing headaches for IT departments. When you zoom out, this massive explosion in AI deployment has triggered a deeply tense geopolitical scramble. The scale of compute required now, it is a matter of national security.
Oh, the atmosphere in Washington right now is electric. Sam Altman, the CEO of OpenAI, is personally briefing the Trump administration and Congress. He's laying out the labor impacts of next-generation models like GPT-5.6, which was recently soft-launched in a highly secure environment to about 20 trusted partners.
Yeah, and the lobbying money pouring in to shape this regulatory environment is unprecedented.
It really is. Anthropic just spent a record $1.97 million on lobbying in the second quarter.
They actually surpassed NVIDIA with that spend.
Which is wild. And OpenAI spent $1.2 million. They are just flooding the zone right as the U.S. finalizes safety review frameworks and debates, creating an independent regulatory body just for artificial intelligence.
But domestic regulation is really only the tip of the iceberg here. The real friction is happening on the global stage.
Yeah.
U.S. Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent is actively threatening to investigate and heavily sanction Chinese open source AI models. He specifically targeted a model called Kimi K3, developed by Moonshot.
And the accusation there is severe, right? The U.S. claims these Chinese models are built on stolen American intellectual property, and they are pointing to quote-unquote watermarks from U.S. models found buried inside the outputs of the Chinese AI.
This is a critical technical juncture.
Yeah.
Because, you know, when most people hear the word watermark, they think of a translucent logo stamped across a stock photo.
Right, exactly.
But how do you watermark a neural network's thought process?
Exactly. I was reading this and wondering, like, how do you prove a digital brain stole from another digital brain? What is the actual mechanism there?
So in the context of large language models, a watermark is a deliberate mathematical manipulation of the AI's vocabulary distribution.
Okay.
Think of it like a cartographer drawing a fake, non-existent alleyway on a city map. If a competitor copies their map, the presence of that fake alleyway proves the theft.
Oh, that makes sense.
With AI, developers slightly tweak the statistical probability of certain obscure word combinations appearing. So if a rival model suddenly outputs those exact mathematically improbable word sequences, it strongly suggests they trained their model using the output of the U.S. model.
Wow. So they're literally tracking the statistical footprint of the vocabulary. But, I mean, China is completely bypassing this containment strategy. Jameson Greer, the U.S. trade representative, pointed out that China's current maneuver is to freely distribute their AI weights.
Yes.
They are just giving the core mathematical brain of the AI away for free on the internet. I mean, they just hosted the MPEC Digital and AI Ministerial Meeting in Chengdu to aggressively push this open tech order. And domestically, they recently approved 120 new generative AI services for public news.
It is a brilliant asymmetrical strategy. In the past, export controls were physical. Mm-hmm. You know, you could intercept a cargo ship full of microchips, but you cannot intercept a decentralized digital download.
Right. Trying to embargo open source AI weights feels like trying to blockade the wind. Once that file is on a server in Switzerland or, you know, a laptop in Brazil, it's over. You can't put the genie back in the bottle. How does a government logically sanction a digital file?
If we connect this to the bigger picture, they really can't. Which is exactly why the regulatory target has shifted from physical embargoes to digital IP investigations and post-release economic sanctions. However, and this is a massive caveat regarding Secretary Bessent's claims of intellectual property theft, there's a vital, impartial point heavily emphasized by lawyer Kung-Jin Kim.
The lack of proof, right.
Precisely. According to lawyer Kung-Jin Kim, there is currently zero public, verifiable technical evidence regarding these alleged watermarks.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Until specific peer-reviewed documentation is released that conclusively proves which models stole what specific data, these threats of sanctions should really be read as political signaling rather than immediate technical fact. Both sides are basically maneuvering for dominance without wanting to trigger a total shutdown of the global tech supply chain.
It is a high-stakes staring contest over the architecture of the next decade. So, you know, what does this all mean? Looking at this entire landscape, from Alphabet's billions in spending to the plateau in raw intelligence, the U.S. Army's budget disaster, and this looming digital Cold War, what's the takeaway for you, the listener?
The primary takeaway is that AI in 2026 is no longer a sci-fi pursuit of a superbrain. It is a logistical utility.
Exactly. The focus has permanently shifted from the laboratory to the boardroom to the floors of Congress and international trade summits.
Absolutely.
On a practical level, your immediate action item is to audit your own token architecture. Do not fall into the hidden budget trap that ensnared the military. Make sure you aren't paying a massive top-tier premium for machine intelligence when a cheaper, highly efficient model like a 3.6 Flash could execute that exact same workflow for a fraction of the cost.
And this brings us to a final lingering thought to leave you with today. We've established that the intelligence curve is plateauing, right? And AI is rapidly becoming a cheap baseline commodity, much like electricity or broadband internet. But if the new battleground for AI is no longer raw intelligence, but rather corporate compliance and geopolitical containment, what happens to the global balance of power when a truly disruptive next-generation model emerges not from a heavily lobbied, regulated corporate server farm, but from a decentralized open source network that no government can sanction or control?
That is the million-dollar question. Because when the software is practically free and borderless, you realize you're actually just trying to regulate the wind. It completely flips the narrative on its head. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Go check your API usage limits, keep questioning the consensus, and we will catch you next time.
This program is provided by lawyer Kyungjin Kim.
For more from the same network, follow China AI, Robotics and Semiconductor Briefing on Apple Podcasts.